but don't wait too long.
Hi everyone, it's Karam.
And it's Sonelli.
And this is Brown Girls Talk Dirty, the podcast about brown girls and their experiences with dating and sex. This week, we are changing it up and having a brown boy. So, hello, Yasser.
Hello.
Yasser is Sonelli's partner, and we thought it would be great to have him on to see what the brown man's experience is, but also how that impacts the women around him. So, are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. Tell us about yourself. How old are you, and what's your background?
I'm 35. I am a first-generation North American Pakistani. I grew up in the Midwest, in the States. Here I am in Canada on a Brown Girls Talk Dirty podcast, which I've been really enjoying, by the way.
How far you've come in life.
I know. I have.
Well, thank you for listening to our podcast.
Yeah, thanks, dude. And, like, it wasn't by force or anything.
No, I don't. You're not by force, are you?
You didn't hold him hostage.
While I look at him with a knife in my left hand.
You will be on this podcast.
Has it given you insight, just to go off that, since you have heard our podcast, has it given you insight into a brown girl's perspective of sex and dating?
Or do you think we're fucking crazy?
I think a little bit of both.
Okay, all right.
No, it has. It's interesting to see what the experience is on the other side of the spectrum. Growing up, I always saw that it was different. You know, brown women or girls were my sisters growing up versus me growing up. Yeah, so it was different, but same at the same time.
I definitely want to hear more about that. How many sisters do you have?
I have two sisters. One is older by a year's change,
mm-hmm.
and one is younger by 10 years.
Okay. So I feel like the older one must have, like, must have set the way, the expectations of what your parents had to deal with. But again, she's a woman, and I feel like her expectations will be pretty different than yours. So tell us about, like, your first experience with dating.
My first experience with dating, I was maybe 16 or 17. I met this girl in a chat room.
MSN days.
MSN days, yeah. This was probably like ICQ days.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's older than my time, man.
Yeah,
you never used ICQ?
What the hell is ICQ?
Yeah.
What? Listen, you oldies gotta realize.
Oh, my God.
How old are you, Karam?
I just turned 29.
Oh, yeah, you missed it by a year or two.
Actually, a couple. Oh, come on.
She got in when AIM was around, probably.
You guys are like senior citizens.
So did you use AIM?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that
AOL Instant Messenger?
Right. Honestly, no. I pretty much just went straight into MSN.
MSN, yeah. Hotmail was big.
Wow. Oh, wait. So your ICQ dating story.
Anyways, yeah. So I met this girl. She was from the other side of the world, from Malaysia. And she was coming over to... We started, you know, online dating. I met her when I turned 17, so maybe a year later. And that was my first experience of kind of like... dating someone. Of course, no one else in the family or anyone knew about it.
Yeah.
Not even my friends. But
that's
yeah.
impressive.
Yeah, wait, is it just a guy thing that guys don't tell friends when they're dating?
Oh no, that's bullshit, girl. Oh.
No, I think where we lived was such a close-knit community. There weren't really any first-generation North Americans. They were Pakistani. They were immigrants. Most of my friends were. And that was the family circle. So I guess I had no trust, to be honest, that, it, you know, if I said something, the word would get out. Eventually, I was seen in multiple places across town at coffee shops and libraries. So the word did get out. My parents did find out.
Yeah, and they beat you in the public square or something?
No, they...
Oh, my God.
Sorry, that's
close,
my Saudi talk.
Close. Well, Saudi and Pakistani conservatism, I would think, is very, very similar.
Okay.
How did you date? How did dating happen if you couldn't be seen?
Secret meetup spots, coffee dates. I would go to her place and hang out. Mm. She was a university student at the time.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, she was much older than I was.
Much older, like a year old?
No, like 4 years older.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I guess for someone in high school, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? So, how were you introduced to dating? You started dating, but how were you introduced to it if you didn't talk about it? Like, you know, if you don't talk about it with your friends as well, how do you learn about these things?
Well, in a conservative Pakistani household, you're not really introduced to dating. It's not really accepted, or at least it wasn't when I was growing up. We're going to introduce you to someone. This is the typical way of how a conservative Pakistani household expects you to date. We'll introduce you to someone when the time is right. That is the person you'll marry. There was really no
inventory
chat of here's how you date or here are the boundaries. By no stretch of the imagination was one of your parents going to sit down with you and talk about sex either.
Were you ever told you cannot talk to other girls? Was that voiced?
Yeah, multiple times while I was growing up. It wasn't about talking to other girls. It was about having a relationship with other girls.
So talking was okay.
Talking was okay, but you weren't really... It wouldn't be cool if I was to just go hang out with a girl at her place, or even a coffee shop, or even the library.
Mm-hmm. And did they believe, kind of like how my parents did, which is like, you can't have friends of the opposite
absolutely,
sex.
Absolutely.
That doesn't exist.
This was a firmly held belief that there is no such thing as a friendship between a young man and a young woman.
And so was this university student that you were dating, I'm assuming this wasn't the AIM girl or the... I don't know what
Yes,
ICQ. Guys, listen. I'm a youngin'. Just be nice to me.
Yes.
So she was another girl that you dated later on, this university girl. Was it the same one?
No, that's the girl. She moved to the city that I was in.
Oh, wow.
And went to university there.
And how long were you guys together for?
Until my parents found out.
Oh, my God. Tell us about the story.
How did they find out?
I think I lied about where I was. I was at her place, and I told them I was at the library.
You got lazy, man.
Yeah, I got... I actually, I wasn't really good at it, because I got caught a lot. They're like, oh, yeah? Well, we just got back from the library, and it's a public holiday, and it's closed.
Oh, shit.
Dude!
Bam! I got a smack from my dad for lying, right?
Yeah.
One time, they showed up to her place, and I was there.
So they knew about her.
Yeah, they knew about her. So then I was like, you know, there was a lot of family drama about how you can't see her anymore. They talked to her about not seeing me anymore.
Oh, no.
So kind of went through that trauma.
So you know how you said that for you, it was, you know, you're kind of told who you're going to get married to, and so everyone lives their life. So you were told who you were going to get married to.
Yeah, yes. In my case, I think was a bit different from most of the Pakistani guys or first generation Pakistanis. Growing up, I was told from a very young age who I was going to get married to.
Like the actual person?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
And it was decided before this girl was even born. It was like, oh, if they have a baby, you're going to get... And I was probably like 5 or 6 years old, maybe 7 or 8 when I started... I can recall hearing that for the first time. I had no idea what it really meant.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's...
Because I just thought you meant, like, the expectation was they'll find a nice brown girl for you in the same culture and religion, and then you marry. But no, this is, like, some royal shit.
Yeah, my parents one-upped that culture of, like...
It is next level.
You know, they took it to the next level.
But that is normal, though. It's not unusual for that to actually exist.
You know what? I think... For our generation, people in their mid-30s, 40s, I think it was normal then. Less and less like... I mean, arranged marriage now is less and less likely happening in the Pakistani or Islamic culture. But at that time, it wasn't like family, friends, and other people that heard about it. They weren't like, oh, why did you do that? Or they were surprised. It was accepted within the community.
Wow. And so as a Muslim boy who wasn't fulfilling his duty in terms of dating this random girl instead of with the woman who he was assigned to, how did the breakup finally happen? Because you said they caught you multiple times. So yeah. How did that end?
At one point, it just got to a point where it was emotional
trauma,
quite forceful. It was like you have to swear on the Quran was brought out, and it was like you have to swear on this book. You will never see her again. Your father is really disappointed, and your mother is disappointed, and you don't want the extended family finding out about this and all of these things. So it was like, okay, I guess I'll do that. So for a long time, I feared, like, what would happen if, you know, I broke this agreement or I went back on my word and I contacted her again.
Islamically, I feel like you'd have to fast 12 days. I'm trying to remember.
So yeah, that kind of broke it off for a couple of years. I think I linked up again with her. So I did kind of go back on what I said. But yeah, by that time, we both had moved on.
Oh, really? Yeah. So you weren't like particularly heartbroken. This was like your first love.
For a young teenager, like it was, yeah, it is my first love. I was, in my mind, I thought, you know, I was going to marry this girl and happily ever after. But no.
I'm curious if that's maybe just a teenager thing, which is possibly that, and or the fact that men are heartless demons. I'm kidding.
maybe no, a bit of both.
How were you able to adapt so quickly?
Adapt to what?
Adapt. Get over this woman, or like adapt to dating, continuing dating, and so on.
Because there were plenty of other women around,
okay.
To be honest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Plenty of other nice brown Muslim women, or just... Men,
no,
women,
I was dating all sorts of women.
And so it didn't deter you knowing that like your parents obviously didn't want you to be dating, period, especially not with Muslim brown women, I'm assuming.
Right, right.
So yeah, tell us about that.
So you've gone through that once, the book has been brought out, you have to swear to never do it again, right? And that relationship ends. Now you go into this other relationship. And does that make you live a different life at home, or does that get you to start doing things differently, where maybe now you have to lie a bit more carefully to your parents? So that obviously makes you lie more, and then you have to start remembering what you're saying, and then maybe you're lying to the girl, because I'm guessing you couldn't bring the girl home.
Yeah, right? Did you have like a duffel bag of like clothes and like BDSM clothes in your locker that you change into and have a double life?
Yeah, like what happens in that situation?
It, you know, that whole Quran incident, and couple that with, we already have a girl pre-selected for you and you have no real choice in it. And by the time you're, you know, 30 or so, we're going to get you married. That, I never believed that I had a choice. So in the back of my mind, it's okay. So when I get to this age, I'm going to get married off. It made me look at dating very differently. So dating was essentially kind of like just sex, mm-hmm. for me. And yeah, it led to a really fucked up life, to be honest. Constantly lying not only to my parents, but lying to the person that I was with. Because I wasn't telling them all of this. Of,
yeah.
Oh yeah, you know, I'm spoken for. I didn't realize it then, but it was not even a double life. It was probably like a triple life. One with whoever I was dating with, one with myself, and then one at home. And then
good point.
Oh my
one
God.
With the community, because I could not be really seen. There was a lot of Pakistanis.
That's four
and
lives
Muslims. Now it's four lives, because you couldn't do anything in public anywhere. You couldn't really go on. I would have to seek out spots to go out on dates where I was sure that no other Pakistani or no other community member from the mosque would be present. It wasn't possible growing up in a small town. I mean, as I said, I got spotted everywhere.
I'm so sorry, because I know Sunil has a question, but I'm just dying to know. Did you ever meet the woman you were spoken for? Did you ever know her feelings or her take on it? Because I almost feel like, I don't know what her perspective was, whether she was, like, resigned to you or not. Sorry, I could probably use a better word. Because the consequences are so much harder for women. I'm just like, did she prevent herself from dating or kind of doing anything, knowing that she had this person who she met that's going to be her husband?
Yeah, I met her a few different times on my trips to Pakistan, because that's where she was.
Oh, okay, that's helpful.
And yeah, she lived in an extremely conservative culture where I assumed that she was not allowed to hang out with guy friends or
yeah.
have guy friends for that matter.
Okay.
And I think, you know, if I was 6 or 7 and I first heard, you know, started hearing this thing from my parents about, oh, we know, we've picked out who you're going to marry, she probably heard it from an even younger age. So yeah, I assume it was a lot harder for her.
Especially when it didn't end up happening that
yeah.
way. Wow.
I wanted to ask, with those four or five lives that you lived, was there one that felt most comfortable, that when you were in that situation, it felt close to who you were?
Yeah. It's whenever I would get out and go to different cities. Dating was a lot of the time what we would do, depending on who I was dating, is go away on day trips and leave the city. That, to me, was complete freedom. Being on the road, being in a city where no one knows me, I don't know anyone else.
Because that felt safe.
Yeah.
There was no fear.
There was no one. Yeah. You weren't looking over your shoulder to see if, oh, is that person, you know?
Yeah.
The brother from the mosque.
Yeah. Is it hard? Would it be, I guess we don't know, but would it be hard for her right now to find another partner since this relationship ended and they live in a community that's so close-knit? You know, everyone kind of knows, I'm guessing, that she was engaged and that has ended. So is it harder for her as a girl living in Pakistan now?
You know, that marriage being called off, I never spoke to her about it. We never talked. It was just the parents breaking it off. I feel kind of bad that I never reached out and did what the manly thing, or like what the right thing to do was. It was called off because of me, and I kind of took the back seat, and it kind of ruffled the feathers between the families and within my family as well. It kind of ruined my relationship with my parents. But I didn't have the courage at that time to step up and say, hey, let me call this off.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of put the blame on my parents that, hey, you did this, you deal with it. It was kind of a stupid thing to do now that I look back.
I think, to be fair, though, knowing that you guys never communicated, it sounds like had personal chats or emails, it would have been even more difficult for her or troublesome if you had reached out privately, only because I can imagine maybe her parents had an issue receiving a private email and then they'd want to talk to your parents. So like, I think having your parents lead the way actually makes more sense to me in this context and in the cultural context. But again, me growing up in the Middle East, knowing about that is still going to be different than this girl growing up in Pakistan and having everything set out for her. So can you tell us about this change of how you were saying you kind of just viewed dating as just sex and you weren't having really emotional attachments, to the point where you called this wedding off with your assigned person?
I think getting up to the point where I was able to make that decision, I think a lot of other things happened along the way. One, I saw my older sister get married through the arranged marriage system. Two, by the time I was 20, I started moving around the country. I started living in different cities. I started drinking. I was making all of these decisions that all I knew that in the past they were forbidden, or they were, you weren't supposed to do. So I kind of was gathering courage along the way. And then I met my current partner at some point. With her, it was different because it was, well, I'm not sure if I want to treat this like all the other relationships where I'd be okay if it ended, then go back to thinking that, okay, yeah, when the time comes, I'll get married in Pakistan. So it gave me a reason to kind of like stand up and say, well, no, I mean, at that point, it was like I had to choose. I wanted to choose because I didn't want this to end. And when that came along, I was like, oh, man. I mean, it was hard as fuck. I'm not going to lie.
You chose the Nelly.
I did. It was difficult because at a point, not only was I going against the grain, it was also an interreligious marriage. And out of all the religions, you know.
Right, you guys had the biggest beef. That's just like me marrying an Israeli guy.
Right, it would be like a Saudi or a person finding a Jewish person.
Sorry, I just gave
a
side eye to Sinelli with my experiences with Saudis. Let's not get into that. Okay,
it was a Muslim-Hindu marriage.
Exactly, so for context, you're Pakistani Muslim. Sinelli is Hindu-born. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I can imagine that's quite controversial. So did you kind of give them almost a double blow where it was like, hey, I'm not going to marry this person, but then also the person I am going to marry is a Hindu girl?
Yeah, and it happened over a period of, like, you know, first I disclosed it to my parents that this is the person I like. Then the Hinduism problem was huge. And then they had to somehow deal with calling off that wedding, which was huge. So it was just a mixture of all of these things, and how do they manage their relationship back home and manage their relationship with their son, who's now standing up after all of these years of kind of agreeing with them and now suddenly saying, nope, not going to do it. Not am I not only going to do it, I'm going to marry this girl who's also Hindu. So that was, I mean, that is probably the worst thing you can do, according to them.
Yeah.
Or according to the Pakistani culture.
So do you know people, or did you have friends who were dating different religions, and they might have been maybe just as attached, but they actually gave it up and did what they were supposed to do as the Pakistani son or the Pakistani girl, because it was just so hard to stand up for themselves?
I had a best friend. I still have that friend. He was in the same similar situation before Sonelli and I made it official, or while Sonelli and I were dating. He went through a phase where his parents forced him to go back home to the Middle East and get married.
Was he an Arab guy?
He was a Palestinian.
My people?
Yes.
Tell me more.
He ended up, you know, turned and twisted into this marriage, and we hung out a lot, and I saw how unhappy he was with the results. When I talked to him about it, you know, his advice was, don't do something you don't want to do. So he was really my only reference point, because everybody else I knew from growing up, literally everybody I knew, I wouldn't really call them friends, they were more acquaintances or people who I hung out with occasionally. They all were dating white girls and black girls and different religions and races. But when it came time to it, it was like, I'm checking Facebook and this person's like, oh yeah, I'm in Pakistan. Oh, by the way, I got married too. I'm like, what the fuck?
Like, this is for real.
This is for real.
Oh yeah, like half my business school class.
And it happens so nonchalantly, where it's like, you were just posting pictures of yourself having ice cream at some ice cream joint yesterday, and today you're posting a picture of, oh hey guys, I'm married.
Now, do you think these people tend to live a continuous lie?
I don't know. I can't speak on their behalf, that, but I know for a fact that they were kind of seeing other people, that they were in the same situation I was in, where they would do it on the down low.
Mm.
But when it came time to it, I don't know if it's family pressure. I don't know if that's just the way they were they were brought up, because I was brought up to believe that I was going to get married to someone, and it wasn't really a choice. It was just like, I just knew that that's what was going to happen.
What was the transition, or how did it happen from your relationships with women being like, okay, this is just casual and physical, to, oh, I actually love this person and I want to marry them and spend the rest of my life with them?
In my mid to late 20s, when I started really reflecting on my relationships and kind of looking back, I felt like I had a deeper connection with people. I started believing that it's not just, you know, the first girl at 17 who I felt, oh my God, I'm in love. I felt like I've been in love so many different times. I don't buy the whole thing of just being in love once, or at least not for me. Yeah, sex was great, but there was so much to kind of reflect. And when I look back at those people, I look at, you know, what's something that bugged me about them? And I look at my own life, I'm like, oh, I can relate to that, because that kind of bugs me about me too. So when I started looking at people as reflections of myself, that's when it started to change. It's like, well, I started seeing myself in other people that I was dating. It's not just about sex. It's more about meaningful relationships.
But I feel like that definitely points to the need for, like, internal growth and emotional maturity that comes along, I believe, in your mid to late 20s. Do you feel it had to do with that as well? Did you start getting into more meditative things where you were getting more in touch with your emotions and your experiences and your feelings?
A few different things were happening in my life where I was connecting more with people, where I was getting rid of material in my life. I stumbled upon a blog post about minimalism when I was in my late 20s, and at the time I was living in like a 3-bedroom, 4-bedroom house full of stuff, and I was the only one living in it. I started downsizing my life. I started looking at goals differently. I started meditating. I started experimenting with marijuana. I started experimenting with mushrooms, psychedelics. I started to kind of undo all the conservative programming that had happened to my mind in my teens.
Oh my God, I just feel that in my gut because you literally stole the words out of my mouth. I'm going through this process of unlearning. And like you mentioned, you have to reprogram a life's worth of data that's just been like jammed into you. Yeah, it's one hell of a journey. And I don't know when you stop unlearning and then start learning your own in your own way. So I'm going to keep picking on you in terms of your transformation to how you are now, because you said, okay, I actually fell in love with a lot of women. What made this different? Where I went from, okay, I love Sinelli to, oh, I want to marry her and spend the rest of my life with her. Was it that cliche of men being like, when you know, or was, how was it like?
How was it like to be with Sinelli?
Be with Sinelli, but in a way that made you go, okay, I don't just love her. I want her to be my partner for the rest of my life.
Like, how did it change to marriage?
Yeah. Or no, I mean, I almost want to say marriage because sometimes you don't need to be married to know.
True.
So, like, what made this person your permanent person?
So I'm going to correct that. I don't look at my relationship with Sinelli as permanent. It's, and I think we've talked about this multiple times, where it's working today. We're okay. So we're going to do it. The day one of us feels that we love each other, but the time has come, it's time to move on. Going back to, you know, when the time was, I think the whole reason we got married in the first place, you know, we walked into City Hall to get married. And we did it on a random Wednesday where we texted each other, are you free? Yeah, I'm free. All right, come on. And somehow that day didn't work out. So we texted each other again the following week or something. And we walked into City Hall and we just did it. And we found witnesses on the spot. I personally did it to just get my family off my back. It wasn't the fact that I was ready to spend the rest of my life with Sinelli. It was, hey, I just don't want to hear anything about, what's that thing called before having sex before marriage?
Premarital
sex,
like,
right?
Haram?
When haram. Yeah, I, you know what? I think that's the word. It's, I just didn't want, I wanted to bring Sinelli around to my family and all that stuff. And I didn't want the label of a haram relationship. So I proposed that we just go and we get married. And she went along with it. And we did. If I had to do it all over again, I don't know if I would even consider marriage. I'm okay with two people agreeing to be in a relationship and just being okay with that.
Is that because you realized that your reasons for making this halal in a way wasn't necessary? Or like, have you grown from that point? You're like, actually, I don't care what my parents think of this relationship.
Yeah, I think it's not just my parents. I think I've come to a point where I've realized that because I did it for that reason, because I didn't want the label of it being a haram relationship or illegit, or that we were living together illegitimately. Going into it with that mindset makes you hold expectations in your mind about the relationship. So let's say if we wanted to call it off, my mind would start thinking, well, what are my parents going to say? What's society going to say? What are people going to say if we decide to go our separate ways? Oh yeah, you know, it's interreligious marriage. They were bound to break up. So I have to kind of go back and think these things through. So it's not about what my parents think or not. It was just that I did it for someone other than us or myself.
And now you care more about you two together as a unit and yourself, that going back, you wouldn't necessarily be married again.
Yeah, it's like,
you don't view it as like necessary for a relationship.
No.
I think you had a good point about permanence. And I think it's a very mature way of addressing the fact that marriage doesn't obviously necessarily mean forever. Neither does the partner you've been with now or for a number of years. I guess I'm curious actually what Sinelli feels like, because I feel like if I had my hubby across the table being like, I don't know if getting married again is necessary for us, I would be like, damn, bitch!
I'm see you at home, right?
You would be smiling really nicely at him, but like your eyes speak murder.
Right? We've actually talked about this so many times, honestly. And it's true, I wasn't for the concept of marriage to begin with. I had talked to Yasser about it, you could sense that we were so careless about it. Where it was, we got our marriage certificate or license, I believe it's called, the first time. We didn't do anything with it. You have it for 3 months and then you can get married. You have to get married within 3 months of getting the marriage license over here. And then it expired, 3 months went up. And the reason I would go to him and be like, yo, are we getting married? Because my mom would be like, when are you getting married? Because at that time she had met him and, you know, it was like, it's always like, okay, what's the next step and when is it going to happen? It's not like you're just dating. Otherwise, it's like, why are you dating? Isn't
it? When are you going to make it acceptable for me to tell people?
And I remember telling Yasser one day, and I said, you know what? Like, fuck it. Let's just have a live-in relationship and not get married. He said something to me. He said, we can do that. And then you'd hear about it for the rest of your life. Or we can get married the way we want to get married. And then we might hear it for a little bit, but then it'll kind of slide because now we're married. And that just made so much sense to me because I was just like, yeah, because I don't want that friction with my family forever. I do love my uncles and my cousins and my aunts, and I want to be able to show up and have family reunions and not have it be a topic of discussion where it's like, Yasser can come with me, and it's not, oh, you're coming with a boyfriend.
Because, it's not you living your double life.
Yes, basically. You know, I just wanted it to be free. And when he said that, I was just like, that's true. We've communicated about marriage so many times that, hey, you know, it's kind of like sometimes we do like a check-in, like if it's not working, let's talk about it. Like what's going on and making sure we both still want it. And not to say like it would not be, you know, it would not be hard or it would not be painful if it did end. I think also we're so used to society stigmatizing divorce as drama and as trouble and only pain and no growth and stagnant and failure, essentially. We fear it. You know, it can still happen with a lot of love, with a lot of growth, and with a lot of respect, right? So I think understanding that and discussing that allows comfort in the relationship, where I'm not scared that he's going to get up one day and go and cheat on me and I'm going to have to find out, because I know for a fact that, this is what I believe we've grown into after lots of years of, you know, discussing and fighting and shouting and screaming and loving and making up, where it's like, he will come to me or I would go to him and say, I've met someone else and I can't lie to you or whatever it is. And that, you know, this relationship has, you know, run its course, but I still love you or whatever at that time the situation is. But I trust that process would happen. It allows for, you know, freedom, and it doesn't bother me. I feel like it's nice that we can talk about it and there can be a different perspective on it.
Yeah. Oh my god, this is like the wokest take in a modern relationship that I've ever seen. I'm so impressed with the level of communication you guys clearly have to be able to express this, but then also it's obvious that you guys are kind of at the same level in terms of how you view the connection and the relationship and the marriage for now, obviously, since nothing's perfect, but it just sounds like you're always open to being as honest about it as possible, because I guess that's how you evolve together and just see how things go.
Yeah, and I think I have to say, like, he's always said, you know, we have to have those uncomfortable talks, and it's those uncomfortable talks that's the most painful. But again, not to say it doesn't come with a lot of practice and patience, mm-hmm. You know? So yeah, that's my take on when he shares his thoughts.
Holy shit.
I had a question for you, Yasser. How did you learn about sex? If it was so, like, we as girls, as brown girls, we learn a lot of it from talking to our girlfriends. You know, so if you, I remember you said that you didn't talk to your friends about dating, so I'm guessing you probably didn't talk about sex.
No.
So how did you learn about it? And safety and every, like, okay, wow, there's a smirk on his face, guys.
I'm just trying to think, like, I think it was 1995. I was 11 years old and we had gotten dial-up internet and I loaded my first porn site onto the computer with a friend of mine who told me about it.
I'm imagining pixels like slowly
materializing. Yeah.
On the screen.
I think before her nipples loaded, I heard someone coming in, and it was a failure for the first time.
Wow.
Because it would start from, like, you know, the head, and then slowly, at pixel by pixel, it would load. So it didn't really work out that time. You know, one of the downsides of growing up when the internet was just about to boom and porn was becoming available to 11, 12, 13-year-olds, and couple that with a conservative Midwest culture, multiply that by a conservative Pakistani Islamic culture within the home, and there's no sex talk anywhere in schools or at home. I think a lot of boys in my generation, we learned sex, or we got our first exposure of sex through porn videos, I believe has had a negative effect into my 30s. To go back and reprogram how you view sex and how it should be done and all of those things. You know, it's had a really long-term negative impact. What helped was science class. When we had shifted over and moved to Canada, science curriculum in grade 9 was the first time someone actually sat us down and talked to us about, you know, it was our science teacher, talked to us about sex, contraceptives, condoms, STDs, all of those things. And, you know, it might have scared us a little bit about STDs and the pictures that they showed and all of that. It was a little late, to be honest, to be hearing about masturbation and sex and all of these things.
In ninth grade.
In the ninth grade, yeah.
That's a really good point you make, because I don't remember, at least I don't remember going through sex ed, you know, and I didn't know a lot about, like, body parts, male or female, or STDs. I had no idea. It was just sex.
This was
just
in Nigeria,
fearful.
Right?
Yeah.
In
yeah.
an Arabic school. So with my experience, growing up in the Middle East, you're not supposed to have sex ed. But I remember my biology teacher in Jordan closed the door, made us promise not to share anything that was about to be said in class, and then gave us a sex ed class when she wasn't, first of all, wasn't supposed to, and second of all, was like risking, you know, her career to basically be like, you need to be educated on sex. And she even told the kids straight up, you have to promise me you will not communicate this outside of class because it will cost me my job.
Oh,
and we're
wow.
all just like, yes, of course, we'd love to know. And then she made it free to be like, you can literally ask any question you have. So, and it was with guys and girls in the same room. So, like, it would have been great if it was split, but this wasn't how it was like, so
right.
it's better to get any sex ed than none. But it was truly at the point where men were just asking, like, oh, miss, is it true that, like, one girl has sex with a guy, her vagina will be shaped around that guy's penis specifically. So if she has sex with another guy, he'll know she had sex with somebody.
Oh my God.
Based
yeah.
on how
yeah.
the penis is formed. Like, like as if we're cake batter or something. Like we're Play-Doh around some kind of key imprint. Like, I'm so... These questions were clearly needed to be said and answered, because our understanding when we were 16 of sex in Jordan in high school was absurd. Like, I remember people talking about how this one girl dry humped a guy, and it was honestly seen as like the sluttiest thing a girl can do. She was like, she was dry humping him,
oh
and
God.
Now she's probably gonna get pregnant.
What a great teacher.
Yeah,
Justin,
she was amazing.
That takes a lot of courage.
And I remember her saying to the guys, it's good to masturbate, you should, because you actually need to, based on how sperm's being developed when you're a teenager, and I think men especially are very fertile, let's say. So she was, like, encouraging it. She's like, it's a completely normal and natural human process. So for her to destigmatize it to some extent with us kids is incredible.
Trailblazer.
So what grade do you think you would have benefited from learning about sex? Grade 9.
I think sex education should start at home, where a father or mother or both, you kind of watch your child and you know that, okay, kid's hitting puberty, and it can vary between, you know, not all boys hit puberty at the same age. I think I would have benefited from it in grade 7 or 8 because of the Muslim community. There was a sex ed class that was in Mississauga in Ontario. But my parents had signed me out of it because, well, the rest of the Muslim community was signing their boys out of it. So while everyone else was learning about sex and masturbation in grade 8, I was with the other Muslim kids in a community center just swimming.
This was in the U.S., right?
No, we had moved from the U.S., from the Midwest to Canada at the time.
Right, and then parents have the choice to opt their child out
yeah.
of the sex ed classes.
And I think some other community member whose kids also attended the same school as I was, she had come over to and talked to my mom or my dad about how they should opt me out.
Oh.
And without giving it any thought, I think my parents opted me out of that course. So, yeah, that would have been great to actually know that you're about to hit puberty or know that you're going to have urges to masturbate and how do you deal with that, not sneak around and kind of go through the process of it.
And sorry, but I just realized we were in the middle of him saying an answer and then deviated with our fascinating sex ed stories. But basically, you said when you finally had sex ed, when you were, I don't know, 16, 17, or 8th grade, 9th grade?
9th grade, yeah.
9th grade. Your view of sex changed from all this pornography that you said was very damaging to you later on in years to seeing, I guess, from a biological perspective?
I think safety-wise, it was great. All the stuff that porn didn't teach you about, like, hey, you can get STDs and use condoms and all of that good stuff. That was good to learn. It kind of normalized it that, hey, I'm not the only one that's having these urges or wants to know more. It's, here's a class of us. I continued watching porn. And that was probably, you know, people try to change a lot of habits during their lifetime, from waking up early to giving up coffee or taking on something else. Or learning a new skill. Quitting porn was by far, or has by far been the most difficult thing I've ever done.
Wow, okay, so you quit porn. That's a huge thing, I think, for a man to say, because it's just so prevalent everywhere. Like, even in food commercials, obviously it's not porn, but I feel like women even simulate blowjobs. Mm-hmm. You just see them kind of, like, opening their mouths and, like, biting into this long sandwich. Yeah. So I feel like we're completely inundated by selling products through sex and through porn. So what made you go, actually, I'm not going to be looking at this anymore?
A whole bunch of different things. I started journaling 6 years ago or so. And when I reflected back on the journals, I realized one of my biggest problems in life was instant gratification. I needed whatever I had decided, I wanted it instantly. Even if it was a long-term goal, I would kind of get depressed if I didn't achieve it instantly. And then I started documenting what are things that I'm constantly getting instant gratification from. And if I wasn't able to have sex or our chemistry wasn't clicking, I would solve that by putting on some porn, masturbating, doing it artificially. And when I realized what I was doing, that was, the mind doesn't know that you're not having sex. It sees pictures on the screen. It thinks you're having sex. Your body responds accordingly. And you fake yourself into believing you just had sex.
So
and
basically,
that's what porn was doing for
me. So basically porn was to you what pasta is to me.
Pretty. So, yeah. And to be honest, having real sex was becoming more and more difficult. It got to a point where I was preferring porn over actual sex. Being connected with the person I was having sex with was becoming more and more difficult. Being satisfied with just having sex without the dirty talk or the thoughts of what I would see in porn videos was becoming, I wasn't fully satisfied if I wasn't playing out what I was seeing in these porn videos. And at that time it was like, holy shit, dude, either you're going to have to change this or you're just going to have disconnected sex. And I didn't want to have disconnected sex.
I also think porn makes men think all women can deep throat. And if that isn't the biggest crock of bullshit, like, if you try slamming that down my throat, I will puke all over your dick. So please don't.
Yeah. Oh my god.
I'm sorry, but
it makes absolute sense. It also, just to add to that, it's like, and this from my experience, that if you get into the habit of only masturbating to porn, then when it comes time for actual physical sex, you might not be able to get a hard-on or perform if porn isn't present. When I started researching this stuff, it was like a lot of couples would have sex, but they would need to put on porn first in order to have sex. And that was alarming. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Because I think with porn, sometimes I sometimes think it's intimidating, you know? I'm just like, because then there's this expectation that I have to be able to do a backflip. What the fuck? You know? So
while giving a blowjob?
You have to have no spine and squirt every time.
Right. And wow, okay. You know, so it was scary. I think porn is scary. actually.
Sometimes. No, it is. It is terrifying, especially because I feel like it desensitizes women and men, but especially men in terms of how to treat women. Not that I'm against porn, because I think there's some porn out there that is pretty great and empowering, but yes, mainstream porn just seems to be about...
It's always a bad story.
Yeah. Like, oh, okay. Well, ignore like the absolutely atrocious acting.
But right, it's absolutely bad storyline. But yeah, I see what you're saying. It's yeah, some porn can be like can be good, but this one is these ones are. I feel you know what it is also is the guilt, because it was like you were not allowed.
Oh, I got Muslim guilt.
Go on it. Right. So it's like when I used to watch porn, or when I do watch porn, it's like there's guilt. I feel like the volume has to be really soft.
Oh, yeah, or no volume.
Yeah, so it's just... On. So it takes away from that excitement of, I guess, watching porn.
And then I also think... I think what annoys me most about porn is that I think it's constructed specifically for the male gaze, or mostly for the male gaze, so I feel like they're doing it to turn men on, and so that's not necessarily what turns women on. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I find a lot of the time this kind of very rough and just aggressive way of handling women, it becomes the thing that all men are like, yeah, this is like how I should be having sex.
Right,
this is totally
right.
normal
that's a good point. Yeah.
to be smacking her around or whatever. Yeah. It's like, no, that's something that happens with communication and consent and all those boring adult things,
right.
you know?
And do you find that so? Do you find
yeah,
that
yeah,
you
absolutely.
Would find a lot of porn that was just targeted?
Absolutely.
So just taking it back to your life, you know, like how we got married and you said your relationship with the family became more difficult or more strained. Is there anything you would do differently? Because let's say we didn't get married. Would that have made, do you think that it would have, you would have had a different relationship with your family?
Yeah, maybe I would continue conforming to whatever their belief system was. But knowing what I know now, what I would do differently is not beat around the bush about anything I believe in. Whatever I may believe in, I would not beat around the bush to express that view. And I wouldn't go out of my way to express that view. If we were having a conversation about something and it called on me to express how I felt or what I believed in, I would go ahead and try to just voice my opinion. I think what I did, which I wouldn't do now, is when I saw myself change, because I grew up in that culture and in that thought process that they have, when I saw myself change, I believed, hey, if I can change, so can my family. And I truly believed it. I was like, oh, I'm getting all these benefits of unprogramming how I was thinking. And now, you know, I have a lot less anxiety, a lot less stress. I'm not depressed anymore. You guys can benefit from this too. So I started offering up all this advice. And that, I think, was not a good approach in hindsight. If I was put on the spot to answer a question, I would do it as honestly as possible, rather than trying to protect my family from the truth. I think that did more damage than anything else.
Right, because at the end of the day, I guess you're living for yourself and not for your family.
Yeah.
On a final note, we had one last question we wanted to know. Like, what would you, like, words of wisdom or, like, your final thoughts on guys currently... who you might think, you know, are currently living that double life, and women that are in that relationship who may not know how to deal with it. Like, any final thoughts?
When I hang out with other men from the Pakistani culture here in Canada, I find that talking about sex is still very much taboo for them. It's very much, let's talk about, when it comes down to talking about sex and relationships, it's all giggles and laughs and jokes and puns. I think we as a people, a culture, should kind of move away from that. Where it's funny at times and you can make jokes about it, but actually just opening up to people around you within your circle and having conversations about sex and misconceptions that you carry, or you want to know what they feel about a certain topic. That would help. Like, just have an honest conversation with your friends and people around you. That's how I turned my life around, of not living a double life, or not living a life in front of my parents that was one, and then outside of the house that was another. So instead of trying to fix that, just focus on being as honest and open as possible as around you. I think so many of us are going through very similar experiences, we just don't know because we don't share them.
On that heavy note,
yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. I think it's helpful for us to hear about things from a brown man's perspective, and also how that impacts women and how those women see other men around them. So thank you.
Welcome.
That's so true. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming, sharing your stories. Lots of insight, lots of honesty. Hey guys, thanks for listening. That's it for this week. We are signing out. Until next time, keep it real.